This ministry is supported by the members and friends of First Unitarian Church of Des Moines. If you would like to support future podcasts, go to www.ucdsm.org to make your contribution.
I was in Davenport, Iowa last week to preach at the local UU congregation there. On my way to church, I drove past a business with a sign in front. A sign with the kind of movable letters that enables the business to display messages. Messages like Help Wanted or Happy Holidays or maybe even God Bless the USA. But this morning, the sign read, Everybody Love Everybody. As a visitor to Davenport that morning, I didn't know how long this message had been up. I didn't know the politics of the owners. I didn't know much, except that this message was there, on display to all who were driving by. Everybody love everybody, the sign said. Not knowing much, I began assigning stories to explain the motivation of the business. I wondered if the message was a reprimand in response to Black Lives Matter, another way of saying all lives matter, which, while true, as a response to Black Lives Matter, at least, is beside the point. I could feel the irritation rising in me that I often feel when someone answers the statement, Black Lives Matter, by saying, All Lives Matter. Of course, all lives matter. Not knowing how long the message on the sign had been up, I wondered if it had been posted as a response to protesters in Charlotte who were busy that weekend, gathering in response to video evidence that excessive and deadly force was used by law enforcement against Keith Lamont Scott a week ago Tuesday. I wondered if the message assumed those protesters were not motivated by their desire to see that everybody is loved, as if they need to be coached on how to love, as they are standing up to systemic inequality and racism that is literally taking lives. And I wondered if the message, everybody love everybody, was meant to be similar to the photos of cops hugging black people that pop up after another questionable killing by police, photos that are posted to remind us that, yes, most cops are good, and if we just appreciated them more, black and brown-skinned people would not be killed by law enforcement at more than three times the rate of white folks. I don't like that my thoughts these days move so quickly to these places. So I scanned the property of the business in search of additional clues to the intent of the sign. I found none. As I continued on my way to the church where I would, incidentally, preach my own version of the message, Everybody Love Everybody, I was uneasy with the negativity I had been projecting. I decided in that moment that I could choose to take the message at face value and not assign negative stories to it. I could choose to not jump to conclusions that would lead me to be defensive or suspicious. I could just take the sign as a needed reminder, an aspiration for us all, and a good one at that. Everybody love everybody. A few days ago, still thinking about the sign, I decided to try to contact the business where I had seen it, to directly ask them what had prompted them to put the message up. Sadly, I couldn't recall the name of the business. I searched on Google, I did all the stuff you would do, but I discovered that Everybody Love Everybody is a message much bigger than this message, than this business in Davenport. Apparently, Everybody Love Everybody is a meme started this summer by a man in Texas. I found a story from a Dallas station narrated by a reporter with a folksy Texas drawl. I'm going to share with you how I heard the story. It's pretty accurate, I think, but you might be seeing signs pop up around town that say, Everybody love everybody. Why, yes, yes, I have. Chris Bailey made the first one with a $2 poster board and a Sharpie he bought at Walmart. Uh-oh. You know what that means. Then Chris Bailey spoke and said, It started the night the officers were shot in Dallas. Again, more judgment from me. I'm no supporter of violence against police. But I wondered if Mr. Bailey had had the instinct to create a $2 sign after the murder, say, of Trayvon Martin or Tamir Rice or Rakia Boyd. There I go again. There I go again. He continued, I posted Everybody Love Everybody on Facebook that night, and the first reply I got was, it's impossible. The next day, I wanted to try to figure out what to do that would be the opposite of hate, and I went and made my sign. The story continues. He took his sign to downtown Dallas and just walked around with it. Someone took a photo. It was picked up by the Associated Press, and it went worldwide. He turned his message into an Everybody Love Everybody Facebook page that now has over 60,000 likes. And the message continues to spread, including, I suppose, to the business in Davenport. It seemed I now had a plausible answer to the origin of the message, but I was still no closer to what it meant to Chris Bailey or to the person who put it on the sign in Davenport. In fact, any stories I had were mostly my stories, created by my assumptions, laden with my presumptions. And these stories are never enough by themselves to discover the story beneath the stories. They are never enough, I would argue, to get to the truth. In this time of great political and social divides, when one person's truth is another person's lunacy, can I get an amen? When we too often ride the waves of emotional energy surging between us and jump to conclusions about others using incomplete information, the thoughts I had in response to the sign with the simple message, everybody love everybody, got me thinking. Might I, and maybe you, have become so quick to be defensive in the face of difference that we can no longer trust our perceptions? Have we become so eager to promote the truth as we perceive it that we cannot adequately listen to nor understand the perceptions of others? And might our tendency to rely primarily on arguments and perceptions that match those we already hold be leading us to be further divided from those whose points of view can be so foreign to us that we can't even begin to comprehend how they could hold such different views? What are we losing when we can so quickly jump to conclusions that keep us separate? We are losing a lot, it seems, an awful lot. Benjamin Mathis is the founder of Urban Confessional. It's a community of artists who, as their website says, believe people should be heard. They believe people should be heard. He and his partners stand on street corners all over the world with signs that say, free listening. And then they see what happens. And something meaningful nearly always does. In August, Benjamin stood outside the Republican National Convention amidst the convention goers and the protesters, holding a free listening sign. He said most of the people who approached him told him about their families, their jobs, the things that had brought them to Cleveland. He wrote, "It's not as divided here as you may think. The discourse is civil and reasonable by 99% of protesters and supporters. Lots of people in real conversations about the issues that brought them here. People are passionate. It's definitely a circus, but it feels safe and more civil than I could have imagined. We're not as divided as they tell us we are. We're not as divided as they tell us we are." In another post about his experiences at the convention, he wrote, "Our Facebook feeds are littered with articles, posts, and images from all types of people. For some of us, this is difficult to handle, so we edit out the ones we disagree with until our feed looks more like an echo board of our own thoughts. If we're not careful, we'll treat people this way. Editing out the ones we disagree with until we're surrounded by people who are just like us. And then we wonder why we're so divided." I know what you're thinking, he continues. It's my feed. I'll block who I want. I shouldn't have to be offended. I don't have time for that. Life is too short. I only want to see what I want to see. If we're not careful, he says, we'll treat people this way, then wonder why we're so divided. Reading his words, I acknowledged that I can be guilty of too quickly retreating to my circles of like-minded opinion. And I also admit that, pastorally speaking, I think it can be useful to retreat from time to time for the sake of our sanity. Can I get an amen? Amen. But I also see the negative impact this kind of retreat may be having on us all, on our politics, on our communities, on our nation. I know we can be better than this. I know we need to be better than this. I want to be better than this. More often than I sometimes do, we might say, I want to see and respond to the thou in the person before me. When a person is standing before me, I want to see the thou in them. I was first introduced to the importance of seeing and experiencing the thou in the other through the writing of Martin Buber, a 20th century Jewish philosopher influenced by Hasidic mysticism. Buber referred to his work as philosophical anthropology. He saw himself as an investigator of the problem of humanity. In his 1923 book, I and Thou, Buber observed that there is a basic difference between the way people relate to an inanimate object, what he called the I-it relationship, and the way people relate to other people, in the best sense of the word, the I-thou relationship. He observed that we sometimes relate to other people not as people at all, but as objects. We view the other not as a thou, a thinking, feeling creature, much like ourselves, but as an it. Buber claimed that this tendency to reduce the other to an it, this tendency to flee from risky and potentially life-giving world of encounter toward the objectifying of others and their points of view, would lead us to doom. More than 90 years after he wrote I and Thou, as so much of our communication occurs within circles of like-mindedness or in our objectifying of the other social media temper tantrums, his predictions of doom still seem timely. God, for Buber, was not an object, but the living center of all true relationship, what we could call the eternal thou, which is greater than all, but present in each. When we objectify others, refusing their complete humanity and the layers of story that make them who they are and that impact how they see the world, we limit the possibility of understanding between us. We limit the possibility of God in the world, the God that is made manifest through wholehearted and humble encounter. To me, seeing another as a thou rather than as an it is a prerequisite for creative interchange. The holy encounter that occurs when we engage with others with the expectation that we could be changed if not transformed by our encounters. Therefore, for me, seeing the thou in every person is a requirement if we are to contribute to the holy, if we are to truly live in the spirit of everybody love everybody. Even if you agree with the necessity of attempting respectful encounter with the thou in others, I'm guessing you find it difficult, and at times maybe even impossible. I know I do. A lot. Certainly it can take a lot of courage and patience to engage with those holding different points of view. But the lesson that Benjamin has learned in his free listening project is that we must work to hear the person, not just the opinion. We must work to hear the person, not just the opinion. Or put another way, we must learn to hear the biography, not the ideology. He writes, when someone has a different point of view we find difficult to understand, disagreeable, even offensive, we must look to the set of circumstances that person has experienced that resulted in that point of view. Get their story, their biography, and you'll open up the real possibility of an understanding that transcends disagreement. Like the roots of a tree, our stories, which can create our beliefs, are completely unique, yet also connected. It is through story that we find common ground enough to coexist in the face of great, often necessary, tension. When you find yourself in disagreement, he says, just ask one question. Will you tell me your story? I'd love to know how you came to this point of view. This counsel appeals to me because even though I don't always apply it in my life, far from it, I have lived it in my work. In fact, in my role and responsibility as a minister, I totally get it. Totally get it. When, for example, I find myself disagreeing with one of you, I know that I have a responsibility to better understand where you are coming from. And I expect you to do the same with me. That's the deal that we strike with one another as members of this congregation of covenant. We choose to walk together as a religious community bound not by creed, but by the agreement that we need not think alike to love alike. We agree to seek to understand even when we must agree to disagree. We promise to have each other's backs. We presume our right to exist and to hold different, nonviolent, non-coercive opinions. As a Unitarian Universalist, this is religion to me, and it matters. So I get it. But how about in my relationships with people with whom I'm not in shared covenant? In other words, what about nearly everybody else in my life? What about them? I know there's only so much time in a day. We only have so much capacity for wholehearted encounter, particularly with people who tell us that they are seeking to deny the rights of those we love, or they're working against the values that have arisen out of our own stories and life experiences. We only have so much capacity for learning from those with differing views on any number of topics. I get it. I'm not suggesting today that every encounter we have must be wholehearted, vulnerable, and risky. I care too much about your spiritual health to suggest that. And yet, I find myself thinking these days, particularly these days, that a bit more listening might do us all some good. A bit more putting aside our prejudgments so that we can get to the deeper story. A bit more hearing the biography, not just the ideology. A bit more seeking to understand before we seek to convince. A bit more engagement with the thou in the other, the thou that is greater than all, but present in each. I titled this sermon, Thou and I, as opposed to how Buber wrote his book, I and Thou, because if we are to be a community of healing, which is our theme this month, what does it mean to be a community of healing? If we are to do that, putting our desire to understand others before seeking to be understood ourselves, putting the thou before the I, is in fact the kind of humble, curious approach that could lead the way. You've heard of the golden rule, I'm sure. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. This is an I-thou orientation, is it not? And it's important. But do you know about the platinum rule? The platinum rule. Seek to understand and treat others as they wish to be understood and treated. Treat others as they wish to be treated. I call this a thou-I orientation. And personally, I prefer the second option. I'd much rather someone seek to treat me as I wish to be treated. Not the way they would want to be treated. I'd rather in their encounter with me, they seek to understand me as I wish to be understood. I'd rather they keep the thou that I am front and center. How about you? Benjamin says when he was holding his free listening sign outside of the Republican National Convention, a woman approached and told him that even though this wasn't, in her words, a hot button topic anymore, she had something to say. She told him as he was holding his free listening sign, I think abortion is wrong. It's not a form of birth control, and people who have them should be arrested for murder. He says as this woman told him of her feelings about abortion, he wanted to stop her and tell her his story of how he had sat with two loved ones as they suffered through difficult decisions and the consequences of ending a pregnancy, how it had been a brutal human experience. He said as this woman spoke, he could feel the familiar burn of disagreement starting to fire within him. But knowing how his story brought him to his beliefs, he knew he needed to know how her story brought her to hers. So he asked her, Tell me your story, he said. I'd love to know how you came to this point of view. It takes courage to ask that, doesn't it? She didn't trust him right away. How often do we actually hear that kind of a question from somebody else? Tell me about your story. But with some encouragement, she continued, telling him how wrong it was to take away a life. She paused then, he says, and, quote, she inhaled the entire world, end quote. It's not fair, she said. All I've ever wanted to be is a mom. My whole life, I knew I was meant to have children. Then when I was 18, the doctor told me I'd never have children. My ovaries were damaged or missing, it doesn't matter which. I kept it as a secret, and when my husband found out, he left me. I'm alone, my body doesn't work, I'm old. Who will ever love me? So I guess I get upset when I see people who can get pregnant, who can have kids, whose bodies work, who can be moms, and they just choose not to. As this woman spoke, Benjamin says, I wondered if she could hear my heart breaking. Sometimes, he says, there's nothing to disagree with. I didn't need to be right. I just needed to be there. She wiped away a few tears, gave me a hug, and thanked me for listening. She exhaled and walked back into the RNC circus. Maybe one day she'll hear my story, but today it was my turn to hear hers, and I hope she felt loved. Everybody love everybody. How can we get there? One way, perhaps the only way, is to seek the stories beneath the story, to put the thou before the I, to understand, as Benjamin says, his free listening project has taught him, that if our love can hold space for paradox, tension, and disagreement, there's room for all types of beliefs and opinions. Division, he says, is a choice. Life, he says, isn't a Facebook feed. Our love, our listening must bring in and not edit out. Dare to listen, he says. Dare to be quiet. Dare to seek understanding. In the end, it's the people we need to love, not their opinions. It's the people we need to love, not their opinions. Everybody love everybody. Sounds good to me. Won't you stand as you're able and join in singing hymn 34?